Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is March 8th. We are in Parshas Korach, and we are on page 824. And we'll start from Pasuk. We'll start from Pasuk Tes Vav again, which is verse 15. We talked about it last time, that Moshe was responding to Dasan and Aviram, and he said that Hashem should not accept Al Tefen Al Min Chasam, he should not accept their portion of the carbon, of the carbon hatamid, of the regular carbon that's bought for everybody. Their portion should not be burned on the Mizbeach. It was a way of excluding them from the Bnei Yisrael. However, we did not discuss the rest of the pasuk, so I want to read that pasuk again. Vayichar l'Moshe mo'od, Moshe was very upset. Vayomer al Hashem, and Moshe said to Hashem, Al tefen al minchasam, do not turn to their flower offering. Don't accept, or not flower, excuse me, don't turn to their offering, to their carbon. Their portion of the carbon, don't burn it up. Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. I did not take a donkey of theirs. Lo harayosi asachad mehem. I did not do evil to any of them. Now, as we mentioned last time, Dasan and Aviram have a personal vendetta with Moshe Rabbeinu. That has been the issue since Mitzrayim, that they have felt that Moshe Rabbeinu is not a competent leader. And they feel that they're the ones who should be the leader. Whereas Korach is upset over the appointment of first Elitzaphan ben Uziel, then of Aaron. He's accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of nepotism, but he's not accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of being generally an incompetent leader, just in this area. But Dasan and Aviram have always had an issue with Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. So Moshe Rabbeinu says that their animosity towards me is unfounded. I've never taken a donkey of theirs, nor have I ever done any evil to them. I never did anything to them, that they have this bad attitude towards me. So what does it mean I never took a donkey of theirs? Why a donkey? I never took an item of theirs. Why a donkey? So if you hold the place here on 824 and turn back to Parshas Shemos, which is when Moshe Rabbeinu and Dasan Avim have their first run-in. So Moshe Rabbeinu has to run away from Mitzrayim to Midian, because Dasan and Aviram, they rat on Moshe Rabbeinu. They go tell Paro that Moshe Rabbeinu had killed the Egyptian. And then Hashem appears to Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush, as we know, and essentially appoints him as the leader of the Jewish people to take them out of Egypt. Now Moshe Rabbeinu has to go back to Egypt. But Egypt was a dangerous place for Moshe to be. There was a price on his head. He was going to be executed. So Hashem then has to appear to Moshe and tell him that the coast is clear and it's safe for you to go back. So on page 310, Pasuk Yotes, verse 19. Vayomer Hashem Moshe b'Midyan. Hashem said to Moshe in Midyan, Leich shuv Mitzrayim. Go and return to Egypt. Ki meisu kol ha'anashim ha'malakshim es nafshecha. For all the men who have sought your soul, those who wanted to kill you, have died. So Chazal tell us, this is a reference to Dasan and Aviram, and they hadn't actually died, they had become poor. They had had possessions, which is striking, since they were also slaves. This is another indication that they were not merely slaves, that they had a position of standing with the Egyptians as taskmasters, there's a different word that they use. Overseers, yeah. As overseers. So they, foremen. So they had possessions, but they lost their possessions. They fell out of favor and lost their possessions. And we know ani is chashuv kemes. There are several types of people that are considered like they're dead even though they're not. One is a poor person. One is a person who has tzara'as. One is a person who is blind, is considered as if they're dead. And there's a fourth. There's four who are considered as if they're dead.
A woman who has no children.
And no children. Right. So the Das and Aviram were considered to have died because they lost their possessions. So Hashem tells him, you can go back to Mitzrayim, the coast is clear. Meaning, even though Paro was going to execute you, but that was 40 years earlier. So, likely, you'll be safe if you go back to Mitzrayim. But if Dustin and Avirim are still agitating to get you, then even if it's 40 years later, they still may be out to get you. But they're no longer players. They're no longer a presence in Egypt. They've lost their standing with Paro. So then it says in Pasuk Chav, verse 20, Vayikach Moshe es ishto ve'esbanav. Moshe took his wife and his sons, Vayarkivem al hachamor, and he rode them on
the donkey.
Vayashav Arza Mitzrayim, and returned to the land of Mitzrayim. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu run away from Mitzrayim in the first place? Because of Dasan and Aviram. Therefore, rightfully, they should have provided his mode of transportation back to Mitzrayim. Since they're the ones who caused them to leave, then he should have had a right to use one of their donkeys to get back to Egypt. And so he did not do that. He did not take anything that belonged to them. He paid his own nickel. And so it was his own mode of transportation back. He rode on the donkey. Now, so that's what it means over here, that I never took a donkey of theirs. Even when I had to go back to Egypt, I used my own method of transportation. However, it does say here, hachamor, the donkey, which is using the definite article, hachamor. Rashi here tells us, I will read it to you, chamor hamiyuchad, the specific donkey. Hu hachamor shechavash Avraham lakidas Yitzchak, that's the very same donkey that Avraham saddled for the binding of Yitzchak. Same donkey. Not only that, v'hu sha'asid melech ha-mashiach lihigalos alav, it is the same donkey that in the future the melech ha-mashiach will be revealed on that donkey. Shenema, as the verse says, ani v'rochev al-hachamor, he will be a poor person riding on a donkey. Evidently, there's a very, very, very old donkey somewhere around in some place that, huh?
Somewhere in Israel.
Possibly Israel, we don't know where he is. And this donkey has seen a lot. He was there for Akedas Yitzchak, he was there for Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he will be there for the coming of Mashiach. That seems to be what it's saying, if we're to take it literally. At any rate, there certainly is a connection between those donkeys, those three episodes of a donkey. It says the donkey. So Moshe Rabbeinu riding back to Egypt, taking his family, he didn't really ride it, he took his family on this donkey. So that's the donkey he uses. And that's what's being referenced over here on page 824, when he says that I never took a donkey of theirs, and I never did evil to any of them. So what does he mean by this? I've never taken a donkey of theirs. First of all, they were in Egypt, he was in Midian. Even if he wanted to take a donkey of theirs, how on earth is he supposed to get a donkey of theirs? The only way he could get a donkey of theirs is to go to Egypt and get it. But he needed the donkey in order to get to Egypt in the first place. So it doesn't make any sense. It's like somebody saying they're in Atlanta, they need to drive to New York, so they're going to go to New York to borrow a car to drive from Atlanta to New York. That makes no sense. So what do you mean he didn't take a donkey of theirs? How could he have taken a donkey of theirs to begin with? That's number one. Number two, they had become poor. Did they have any donkeys? Apparently not. They lost their possessions. Who says they had a donkey? So what is, and finally, Moshe Rabbeinu took a very, very special donkey. He was given the donkey. So what do you mean, I didn't take their donkey? Let's say he would have had a choice. Theirs or this one. Let's say you're given a choice. You get a choice to ride the donkey that was used for Akedas Yitzchak, or just a regular old donkey. I think you'd choose the one that was used for Akedas Yitzchak. That's pretty special. So what does he mean here? I never took their donkey. And did he want to take their donkey? So what he means to say, as we said before, is, I never took any possessions of theirs. I never used anything that belonged to them. That's what he meant to say. But he specified the donkey because really it was their fault that he needed a donkey in the first place. But in the end, when he comes back to Mitzrayim, he rides that special, he takes along with him that special donkey. So what does that say about his journey to Mitzrayim? The donkey that was used for Akedas Yitzchak, that is the, that episode is what propelled us to becoming Klal Yisrael. It was that, that was the 10th test of Avraham Avinu, according to most opinions, and that is what solidified that now there was going to be a Klal Yisrael. Had Avraham failed that test, then it, there would not have necessarily been a Klal Yisrael, certainly not in the same way that it happened. So the, that was the final forging of Avraham Avinu, and Yitzchak comes through in that one as well. Moshe Rabbeinu going to Mitzrayim and taking the Jews out of Egypt, that is the fulfillment of the Bris Ben Abisarim, the covenant between Avraham and Hashem and Avraham. And now the Jews are primed to becoming the Jewish people. They're going to go from Mitzrayim to getting the Torah. So here they have this, the donkey. And of course, the third and final step in this very, very long journey of us Jews in bringing the world to where it needs to be is going to be the coming of Mashiach. So there was Avraham Avinu who started it all, and then comes getting out of Egypt, and finally the coming of Mashiach. And this donkey is the common denominator between the three. So when Moshe Rabbeinu invokes that over here, so there are a few things that are being implied. They keep on arguing that I'm not an appropriate leader, but I came to Mitzrayim on the donkey. Hashem appeared to me in the burning bush, and I came with the donkey. You can't argue that I'm not the appropriate leader if this is what the donkey, the person who shows up, Bimheirav Yomeinu, on the donkey. Are we going to say, he's not the real person from Mashiach? What's he doing on the donkey if he's not the right person? If he's on the donkey, that's a pretty good indication that he's the right person. I don't know how we're going to know who the right donkey is. But I'm just saying, if there'd be a tag on the donkey that said, this is it, right? Then we would know he's the right person, right? Today, if anybody's riding a donkey, you're going to know it's the right person,
that's right?
Exactly. What are you doing on a donkey? Okay. So he's saying, he's invoking this particular item because this is directly in opposition to Dasan and Aviram's point that he is not the right leader. That's number one. But there's more to it than that. There really is more to it than that. Moshe Rabbeinu was in Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu was in the palace of Paro. And he saves the Jew who's getting beaten up. And he kills the Egyptian. But Moshe Rabbeinu is not yet Moshe Rabbeinu. He's getting there. But he's not yet Moshe Rabbeinu. He has not had prophecy yet. He has not become the Moshe Rabbeinu. The sequence of events are that Dasan and Aviram, they rat on him. They tell Paro about him. He gets taken to be executed. Several miracles happen, and he gets away. And he runs to Midian. In Midian, he finds his wife, Zipporah. In Midian, Hashem appears to him at the burning bush. And he's told to go back to take the Jews out with the donkey. At the end of the day, all of that was triggered by Dasan and Aviram. Even though they didn't do it properly, but if you date it back, they're the ones who triggered Moshe Rabbeinu coming full circle, leaving Egypt, becoming Moshe Rabbeinu, finding his wife, etc., and then returning to Egypt ready to take the Jews out. That all is triggered by Dasan Aviram. Now, that doesn't mean to say that it would not have happened without Dasan and Aviram. Had Dasan and Aviram not done what they did, Hashem would have had a different method of getting the Jews, getting Moshe Rabbeinu primed to do what he had to do. But at the end of the day, it is Dasan and Aviram who are the trigger for Moshe Rabbeinu becoming Moshe Rabbeinu and now being primed to save the Jewish people. A similar thought, just so we can bring it home, Huh?
Thinking of Joseph.
You're thinking of Joseph. Good. That's another. We've talked about that. Yeah. That how that the brother son whole thing triggered it with Joseph. That his.
Yeah, but Chalem Penina because she triggered her.
Okay. Good. 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 But more specific to the time we're in right now, the several Mefarshim, including the Nesiva, so Yaakov Milisa. Lisa is the name of a city. Rav Yaakov Milisa. From Lisa, that's the Nesivos, he writes that with the intention of Chazal, when they say, Chayev Adam Lipsume Bapuria, a person is required to become inebriated on Purim, Ad Lo Yada bin Arur Haman Labarach Mordechai, till they don't know the difference between the cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. What he says and his explanation for that is, one of my Rebbeim and Rosh Hashiva Rav Kolevsky used to say this over every year, Zechon Rebracha used to say it every year, is that that a person is supposed to get so happy on Purim that they have trouble grasping what is so bad about Haman. Haman is the one who triggered the entire Yontif of Purim. Had there not been a Haman, there wouldn't be a Purim. Yeah, he was a scoundrel. Yeah, he wanted to do terrible things, but in the end, nothing happened. In the end, it didn't happen. And in the end, just the opposite. We became closer to Hashem. Kimu v'kiblu, we accepted the Torah anew. It was wonderful. It was, in the end, a great thing happened. So it's hard to say, curse Haman? What do you mean? Maybe we should bless Haman, because look what happened. So clearly that's only looking at it from a very specific angle. But from that angle, Haman is the cause for great celebration in the end. So here, Dasan and Aviram, although they did not mean good, they meant bad, but they did ultimately trigger a very, very good thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying over here that Hashem, he's saying to Moshe, Hashem, don't accept their carbon. I did not take a donkey of theirs, and I never did evil to any of them. Yes, it may be true that they have a zechus. There is a merit for them, despite themselves. They have a merit, because they brought about Yitzias Mitzrayim. They're the ones who got me to run away, and I met Zipporah, and I had the burning bush, and they triggered all of that. Nevertheless, Hashem, don't deal with them anymore. Don't deal with them. That they may have had a merit, but they've used it up. They've been after me. They've been running. They've been trying to take me down ever since the beginning. And I've never done anything bad to them. If anything, they should be happy for me because I'm their ticket. If they champion me, if they say, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the man, you're the one, you're the leader, then they could arguably say, even though we didn't mean it for good, but we deserve merit in that we brought about Moshe Rabbeinu. But if they're constantly trying to take me down, they're rejecting that merit. The Gemara says that every Jew starts with a portion of the world to come. Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Lam Abba. The Mishnah says, every Jew starts with a portion of the world to come. Ve'elu, and the following are the ones who do not have a portion of the world to come. There's a list of people who do not have a portion of the world to come. What's the number one person on that list? Ha'omer, one who says, Ein Tchias HaMeisa Min HaTorah. There is no resurrection of the dead. So the Gemara says, why does he lose his portion of the world to come? Because since he denies the world to come, he doesn't get the world to come. Because it's Mida Keneged Mida, it's measure for measure. If they're denying me as the appropriate leader, then they are rejecting the merit they could have for having triggered my entire process of becoming the leader. If they would embrace my leadership, then they would have claim to at least a measure of merit for having brought about my leadership. But they're rejecting me. So if they're rejecting my leadership, then they don't deserve that merit at all. And so Moshe Rabbeinu is invoking all of that over here, and therefore Das and Aviram have really run, they're at the end of their rope. They've been given a lot of rope, they've been doing a lot of things over the course of the Torah since Mitzrayim. As we said, they were shotrim, they were overseers in Mitzrayim, and therefore they did have great merit, they got beaten up on behalf of the Jewish people, but they've done too much already. This is machlokas. This is a fight, and as we see, there's going to be dire consequences because of it. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. So As we said before, Moshe Rabbeinu had originally told Korach and his men that tomorrow is when all of this is going to happen, we're going to take the fire pans, and he was basically warning them, you understand, only one person is going to survive this. You've got over 250 people, only one is going to emerge as the correct Kohen Gadol, everybody else is going to be dead. So he was warning them, hoping that they would back down. But nobody was backing down. So now Moshe Rabbeinu actually lays down what is going to happen tomorrow. Vayomer Moshe al Korach, Moshe says to Korach, Atah v'chol adaska, you and all of your group, hayu lifnei Hashem, you will be before Hashem. This is talking about tomorrow. Atah v'heim, you and they, v'aharon and aharon, machar tomorrow. So we're going to have a confrontation. It's going to be you, your 250 men, and Aaron. It's unclear whether Dustin and Aviram are part of this or not. Meaning they're part of, they're certainly part of the rebellion. But are they laying claim to being Kohen Gadol? As I mentioned, they had a different argument. They weren't coming about the Kohen Gadol. They were coming about Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's unclear whether they also had fire pans. We'll see, perhaps later on we'll know. Ukechu ish machta, so each man will take his machta. A machta is a pan, like a big, picture a big frying pan which holds coals. Unisatem alehem ketores, you'll put on that the pan, you'll put ketores, so you're going to put the incense. Vikraftem lifnei Hashem ish machta, so and each man will bring before Hashem his what do they call it here? His fire pan. Chamishim u'masai machtos, 250 fire pans. So they're really it's the 250 men. Ve'atav ve'aron ish machtoso, and you and Aaron also, each one having his own fire pan. So it's 252 fire pans. Apparently, Dustin and Aviram do not have a fire pan. So it's 250 men, Korach and Aaron, each with a fire pan. And we're going to see who the real Kohen Gadol is. So we're going to do this tomorrow, and we're going to that's going to decide it. Vayikhu ish machtoso, so each man took his fire pan. It didn't, nobody backed down. Everybody said, okay, good idea. Vayitnu alehem ish, and they put on them fire. Vayasumu alehem ketores, and they put on them ketores. Vayamdu pesach o'amoid u'moshe v'aram, and they stood. They stood in front of the Olamot, in front of the Mishkan, and Moshe and Aaron. Now, it's not yet the morning. So, they have the pans, they have the fire, they have the ketores, they have the incense. It sounds like they're already burning the incense. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu really said to do it tomorrow, it sounds like they're doing it already. We'll have to see how literal that is. But they've got everything together. The way they translate it here is, and they put incense on them. It sounds like they were doing it now. But what happened is Korach wasn't satisfied with this arrangement. He wanted it to be a public humiliation of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayakel alehem Korach es kol ha'ida, and Korach congregated the entire congregation against Moshe and Aaron el Pesach ohel moed, to the entrance of the ohel moed. Vayerach v'Hashem el kol ha'ida, and Hashem appeared to the entire Eda. So Rashi tells us that that this was Korach had gathered everybody together with Rashi's bedivrei leit sonus, with words of scorn. And I'm going to read you the Rashi. Kol halayla hahu, all that night, halach eitzel hashvatim, he went to all of all the tribes, upita osam, and he enticed them. Kisfurim atem, do you think, shalayla vadiyani makpid, that all I care about is me? That you think it's just me that I'm worried about? Eini makpid ela bishvil kolchem, I'm worried about all of you. The way that Moshe Rabbeinu is treating you. Eimu boin v'notan kolan gedula, these come and they take all of the greatness. Lo hamalchus, he gets to be king. Ula achiv hakun, his brother, gets to be the Kohen Gadol. He's achenispatu kulam, until they were all entice. They were all brought into the machlokas. So Korach has expanded the machlokas. Korach, you see, was a very influential person, a very charismatic person. He used it for machlokas. As we know, he was very, very wealthy, but he was also very persuasive and charismatic. And that's an incredible tool that he had. A very, very powerful personality, and he managed to not only get the people of Reuven with the 250 men into his machlokas, but he was able to, in the end, to get everybody involved in this machlokas. So
a lot of people for one person to be able to.
Yeah, You see, Korach had great potential for good. He was a very talented person. There was a lot there that had he not lost himself in his arrogance, he could have used it for a lot of good. There could have been great things that would have come from Korach. And in fact, Shmuel comes from him. Shmuel HaNavi comes from him. There's greatness that comes from Korach. And Korach's sons are mentioned in Tehillim. There's a lot of power, a lot of greatness in Korach. But unfortunately, he himself gets lost because of his arrogance, and that does him in. Now, I'm gonna present this in this simple manner, so we don't have to get confused about when they burn the incense. The simple reading of the Pesukim, we're just gonna keep it simple, is that when it says in Pasuk Yud Ches, when it says in verse 18, each man took their fire pan, and they took fire, and they took ketores and all that. That was already the next day. In other words, the Torah skipped ahead to the next day, and they did what Moshe Rabbeinu said, which is they brought the ketores. In Pasuk Yotes in verse 19, the Torah is explaining that the previous night, Korach had gotten everybody involved. So that at this point in the morning, we've got all of Klal Yisrael congregated around the Mishkan. Moshe and Aaron are basically surrounded, and they're having this confrontation. So, as you know, we're going to have the dramatic events of the ground opening up, but this is where we stand right now, where we have the 252 people offering ketores, and all of Klal Yisrael has gathered around, and they are primarily on Korach's side. They're primarily there because Korach has convinced them that Moshe Rabbeinu has been involved in nepotism for himself, for his brother, and therefore they need to be. We need to replace them.
It's another example of somebody doing something for the wrong reason, but it turning out for something good because everybody was there for the wrong reason. Korach rallied them for the wrong reason, but it turns out.
They're going to witness a great miracle. Right, right. Although we're going to see, you're right, but we're going to see that it's not going to be simple for the people. We all know the Korach story. The Korach story is that the ground is going to open up and they're going to get swallowed up. Right? Done. But it's not done, as we'll see. It's going to continue on. There's going to be the results of this machlokes are going to linger even after Korach is swallowed up, as we'll see. But you're right, it does mean that you have an entire group. I mean, all of Klal Yisrael is witnessing this incredible miracle. Right. So, Pasuk Chav, verse 20, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe al Aaron, Lemar Hashem speaks to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Hi badlu mitocha eda hazos, separate yourselves from this eda. The word hi badlu, you see the letters beis, dalad, lamid, that's from the word havdalah. Hey, Beis Dal Lamed, Havdalah, separate yourselves from this Eda, this congregation. Va'achale osam kiraga, and I will wipe them out in a moment. Hashem is saying, I will destroy, it sounds like, all of Klal Yisrael, or at least everybody involved in this machlokas, which at this point is just about everybody. So Hashem says, I'll wipe them out, and except for you too, Moshe and Aaron. Vayiplu al pnehem. So Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces. Vayom, and they said, Kael, Elokei haruchos lechol basar. God, who is, how do they translate it here?
God of the spirits of all flesh.
Okay. Hayisha chad yacheta, v'al kol ha'idah tiktsof. They're asking a rhetorical question. asking a question. Should one man sin and you'll get angry at the entire congregation? That doesn't seem to be justice. That one man sins, Korach sins, and now you're going to kill everybody? They don't deserve it. They didn't start this machlokes. Now, what does it mean? Elokei haruchos l'chol basar, the God of the spirits of all flesh. I mean, he's the God of everything. So he's including the spirits. So hold the place, please, over here at 8:24. Turn ahead, please, to Parashas Pinchas on page 888. Page 888, verse 15. It's the start of the paragraph. Vayidaber Moshe el Hashem lemor. Moshe speaks to Hashem, saying, Yifkod Hashem Elokei haruchos l'chol basar. Hashem, who is the God of the spirits of all flesh, should appoint Ish al Ha'idah, a man over the congregation. This is when Moshe Rabbeinu is asking Hashem to name his successor before he dies, which of course is going to be
Yahushua.
Right. So here Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for that he appoint Yahushua before Moshe Rabbeinu dies, so everybody knows what the line of succession is going to be. There shouldn't be any upheaval in that succession.
So God should look into the souls of the people.
Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu uses the same phrase here as they use in Korah. The God of the spirits of all men.
Isn't the Ruach one of the levels?
What do you mean?
Nefesh?
Yeah, that is true. That is true. We have five levels of soul. That's true. But here, what does it mean that he's the God of the spirits of all men? So, as Rashi explains, Hashem knows each person individually. Mm-hmm. Meaning, Hashem knows and discerns the differences between each and every one of us. No two people are exactly the same. No two people have ever been exactly the same, nor will they ever be exactly the same. People are always a little different from each other. And Hashem is able to discern the differences between each and every one of us, not just everybody in this generation, previous generations. He can discern it all.
Scary.
Yeah. So Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Pinchas is saying to Hashem, appoint somebody who will be able to deal with all the myriad of different types of Jews that there are. If you're going to lead the Jewish people, you have to be able to deal with everybody. You can't have a myopic view of people. If you're going to lead the Jewish people, you got to be able to deal with everybody. And there's all kinds. Everybody's got their strengths, everybody's got their weaknesses, everybody's got their issues, and you got to deal with everybody. So when that phrase, Elokei haruchos l'chol basar, the God of the spirits of all flesh, is a phrase that connotes discerning between people, specifically zeroing in each person's strengths and weaknesses. So here in Parashas Korach on 8:24, what they're saying is, Hashem, you know who the sinners are and who the sinners aren't. You know the differences in each. You know exactly. Is it true that right here in front of us we have the entire Jewish people and they're all here for a bad reason? They're all here to witness the demise of Moshe and Aaron. Yes, that is true. Are they all the same? No. Some of them are worse. Some of them are better. Some of them were just drawn in. Some of them have a real vendetta. You know the differences. You know a based in a flesh and blood court cannot make those decisions. If somebody commits a crime, and they commit a crime in the way that the parameters of the Torah set it up, so let's say a person commits murder, and God forbid, and there are two witnesses, and the witnesses warn the person, if you commit this murder, we're going to take you to court, and they're going to kill you, and he says, I don't care, and he does it anyway, so then the court has to put that person to death. The court can't take into account, yes, but this, yes, but that, but what about his family? What about this? What about that? But he was angry. But Court can't do that. The court has to have rules, and those rules have to be followed, otherwise they have no court system. Mm-hmm. We can't get inside people's heads and play God and know what they're thinking. We have to have a system, and this is the system. If in fact the person deserves something better, Hashem will take care of that. But we can't do that. But Hashem is the ultimate based in, and Hashem knows everything, and there's nothing that's hidden. And therefore His judgments can be very, very, very specific. And that's what Moshe and Aaron are saying to Hashem. Don't make a blanket punishment over here because of what they're doing. Single out the individuals and punish people according to their actions. Now, this is a madrega. It's a particular level, meaning like this. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We go before Hashem and we say, we know that Hashem is judging each and every one of us very specifically. Everything we did throughout the entire year, we are getting judged for. We know that. And it's frightening. And we're aware of that. And then comes the judgment, then comes Yom Kippur, and we're sealed, etc. And we hope it's a good judgment. But as much as we are judged independently, we're also judged collectively. There's different types of judgments going on. There's a judgment for each and every person. There's a judgment for each and every community. There's a judgment for each and every city. There's a judgment for each and every country. There's a judgment for the entire world. We say this in Zichronos, in the section of Musaf for the remembrances. We say that Hashem judges the countries, the cities, the communities, the individuals. There's different layers of judgment. So sometimes when something happens, good or bad, God forbid bad, but also good, sometimes when things happen to us, if they are because of judgments, which it's not always the case, sometimes things happen to us because when we were born, this is the path our life needed to take, and Hashem already embedded into our lives these various events. Sometimes that's the case. Sometimes, of course, it's the result of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because there was a judgment, and this is the way the judgment is going to pan out over the course of the year. But when things happen, sometimes it's because of an individual judgment, sometimes it's because of a communal judgment, sometimes it's because of a country judgment, sometimes it's the world. There are different judgments that go on, and we are individuals, we're also part of a community, we're also part of a city, we're also part of a world. So the judgment, sometimes it's not because of an independent thing, sometimes it's broader than that. When judgments happen on a broader level, they are by definition not specific. Meaning there's just a general gzeira, good or bad, for this region or for this country. And if you belong to that region, you belong to that country, then you're swept up in that. And that can happen. It is a higher level for Hashem to judge the individual and to deal with the individual based only on the individual's actions. That is a higher level. It is that level of
specialness.
Okay, so that level is a higher level. And when Hashem is directly involved, then that's what He's doing. It's very, very specific. So Moshe and Aaron are saying to Hashem over here, we understand that you could judge the Jews as a unit over here. They're behaving badly. So you want to punish all of them because they're behaving badly, which is true. We are asking, don't do that at this time. Make it a higher level of judgment. Judge everybody independently, specifically, and punish the sinners, and don't punish the ones, or punish less harshly those who are not really in the thick of it. And Hashem says, you are correct, you've argued well, I am going to make it known who are the real sinners. And ultimately, the punishment that's going to happen, which the miracle that's going to happen, it's not just that the ground opens up. It's that it's going to be very, very specific. Similar to Kriyas Yamsuf, where the splitting of the sea was so specific and how the Egyptians were punished, here as well, it's going to be very, very targeted. That's what's going to happen over here. And that is a higher level of judgment. And that's the way it's going to work, that it's going to be a very, very specific judgment. So that, Mirtz Hashem, we are going to see next time when we get to the punishment of Korach.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.